Oh, I'm the only one on. Do want my sweater on. How you doing?
Doing okay. How are you doing this morning?
I'm okay. I'm okay. Well, so this is going to be post-election mindfulness today.
That's right.
I think we, too bad it really isn't post, but
ongoing election drama mindfulness.
Right. We could use it, all of us.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Well, at least it'll be a nice day.
Yep. Gotta love the sunshine.
Yeah. Actually, I was thinking about being outside this morning, but it's still too cold.
Yeah. Yeah. The mornings are cold.
Yeah. But it's just, I always liked doing that, provided the lawnmowers didn't start when we were doing mindfulness. Because.
Right.
Yeah. but the birds would be chirping, and you know, it was nice, you know.
Yeah,
nature setting, peaceful.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Hello. Oh, everyone's coming on now.
Checking on my sound.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Phyllis, I just read your email.
Okay.
Don't you dare. How could we be mindful on a day like this?
Okay. I think we need it today more than ever.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
It's nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
Keep checking my phone, what's new. Right. Yeah. Please, they go update. I don't go okay, and then it says the same thing.
Yeah.
Right.
I guess they took the night off from counting and slept.
No, they said somebody counted all night. I forgot.
Oh, really?
I don't know.
They must have had shifts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And you wonder what's going to happen once it's done.
Well,
yeah.
Didn't he say he's going to contest the mail, the ballots?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's already filed several lawsuits.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's.
I mean, lawsuits are his specialty.
Yeah.
When they kept, you know, saying, you know, it's going to be Biden. I'm thinking, yes, get that man out of the White House.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Get that man.
I just find it remarkable. There's so many people that have voted for him. It's just unbelievable.
Yes.
You know, I'm just hoping for a landslide, and I'm just so depressed that all these people voted for him.
I was just reading that in the paper, and the whole style section. There's like two or three articles about the people who thought it would be a landslide. I think we just live in a very odd area, you know.
We do. Yes, right. We live in a bubble. It's got it all.
A landslide, I just hope. But it was, you know, and I have a friend who lives in Nashville and a friend who lives in Naples, Florida. And when I talked to them, they were really worried, and because they're surrounded by Trump supporters. The whole area. And so, you know, they thought, oh, there's not a chance that Biden would win. But, you know, I'm living in a different bubble here. North Carolina, so.
But I mean, you know, you kept hearing about all these Republicans who couldn't stand him and wanted him out. And I'm like, where do they live? Washington? I mean, that doesn't help, you know, area. Get it, you know.
People just believe whatever he says.
Sorry about that. That's can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I can hear you. What a joy.
And you don't look a day older, Susan.
No, belated happy birthday.
Yes, happy birthday.
Oh, it's birthday. Happy birthday.
It was my birthday yesterday, yeah.
Ah.
How did you celebrate?
You don't really want to know.
Oh, really? Okay.
Aww. There have been better birthdays.
Oh,
I'm sorry. But, you
know, fine, we're here, and that's okay. It's just today.
I get the double whammy. Mine's on Thanksgiving this year. So it's going to be no Thanksgiving.
Right, no birthday.
Yeah, mine falls on Thanksgiving every few years as well.
Yeah. It was, it's work. It's work, as you know, to stay focused or unfocused or whatever. And then there's work. And then we just had John had a rough work day and thought, well, we'll catch up. my daughter sent me a cake that was hilarious.
Oh, that was sweet.
Ordered a cake from Zaro's in New York and had it delivered here.
Oh, wow.
That was really sweet. So that was actually really lovely. And John didn't go out, but he ordered flowers to the house. So,
okay, nice.
Hey, that's nice.
It's fine. And everybody called.
Okay, so. Can't ask for more than that.
You know, right. It's all right. No fancy birthdays. It's okay.
But think of all the makeups when this is all over that we're all going to have for birthdays, anniversaries, everything.
I was laughing. I was talking to a colleague friend of mine who's in California who did a lot of the ACC work with me when I was on the board and president. And I don't even think I could count for you the number of times I have spent my birthday at an ACC board meeting or at a URJ biennial. It's more than 10.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty sad. So this was an upgrade. I've spent my birthday in some very weird ways and places. It's always been around election day. As a kid, it was fun. Occasionally I'd get my day off. I get a day off for my birthday.
No, it's true.
Yeah. Here we are. All right. So let's get comfortable. We need to be comfortable. Is everybody else doing okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're eating our way through the election.
Eating our way through the election. Yes.
Lots of comfort food.
Yeah. Lots of comfort food. And I'll admit a little bit of tequila.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So I wanted to start with this poem, which some of you may have heard me read before. It's written in 1947. And it was in the New Yorker magazine in 1947. It's called The Duck. Now we are ready to look at something pretty special. It is a duck riding the ocean 100 feet beyond the surf. No, it isn't a gull. A gull always has a raucous touch about him. This is some sort of duck, and he cuddles in the swells. He isn't cold, and he is thinking things over. There is a big heaving in the Atlantic, and he is part of it. He looks a bit like a mandarin or the Lord Buddha meditating under the Bo tree. But he is hardly enough above the eyes to be a philosopher. He has poise, however, which is what philosophers must have. He can rest while the Atlantic heaves, because he rests in the Atlantic. Probably he doesn't know how large the ocean is, and neither do you, but he realizes it. And what does he do, I ask you? He sits down in it. He reposes in the immediate as if it were infinity, which it is. That is religion, and the duck has it. He has made himself part of the boundless by easing himself into it just where it touches him. I like the little duck. He doesn't know much, but he has religion. So I wanted to begin with that poem with a short sitting practice with the thinking about this week's Torah portion and this week and the midah, the quality of minuchat ha-nefesh, of what I would translate as equanimity. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. But minuchat ha-nefesh, meaning like a resting, literally a resting of the soul, which we need. So just sit for a moment. You can think about the words of the poem, the resting of the duck. Notice that with every breath, we have an experience of the filling and the emptying of the lungs. Menuchat ha-nefesh. The nefesh, the soul part that is closest to our body. So an equanimity being a balancing of body and soul. You can feel the rhythmic lifting and settling of your upper body. The sternum rises as the diaphragm descends with each breath that flows in. Then the diaphragm releases. The sternum settles, the descent of the upper body toward the earth, feeling the parts of your body that are in contact with the earth or with something that is in contact with the earth as a source of rest, as a source of grounding. Perhaps you notice you're sitting, your sit bones are where your weight is. Perhaps the contact of your torso against the back of the chair or sofa, blanket if you're leaning or lying. The soles of your feet resting on the floor or on a footrest. Notice where they connect in your shoes if you're wearing shoes, or where slippers or socks are holding and touching. When we think about breath often as in and out, in this moment we can think about it as rising and falling, ascending and descending. And our exhale as we descend, resting more deeply in the earth, in what supports us. The duck resting in the waves. Let's see if you can continue to notice that experience of grounding, of rising and falling as we're sitting together. So I was really thinking a lot and practicing a lot of Menuchat HaNefesh, of this experience of equanimity. And I love this poem, The Duck, that was shown to me by my teacher, Sheila Weinberg, because it's such a great image. I like images. I like metaphors and images. So like, just like imagine the duck in this heaving ocean and it doesn't capsize. It's not still, it's not stiff. It's just moving, right? It's being buffeted by the waves. Stuff happens. It's not like, and it knows it, right? He realizes that he doesn't know how large the ocean is. Right? There's something beyond that. There's stuff that's just going to happen. But it doesn't capsize, right? He rewrites himself. And that's a Musar practice. That's a mindfulness practice of equanimity, of Menuchat HaNefesh, of this resting of the soul. It's not a numbness. It's not a shutting down, which maybe we wanted to do this week, just like close everything off, right? But how can we use Jewish teaching and a spiritual, physical practice? And I love Menuchat HaNefesh because, as I said, like there's different Judaism thinks about different aspects of the soul, and nefesh is the aspect that is most closely associated with the body. And there is this nexus, this connection between body and spirit, right? In a practice, in an idea of an experience, thinking about what does it mean to be equanimous, is that the right adjective, to embody equanimity, which isn't like an even keel. So it's not, everything is not going along swimmingly easily. Life is change. And life is often uncertain, and the things that we, you know, often that we don't want to happen, happen, and things that we want to happen sometimes don't. But what we can adapt with and what we can work on is how we relate to that ongoing experience of change and that ongoing movement. And even in this week in Torah, it's filled with stories of Sodom and Gomorrah. The story of Sodom and Gomorrah is in this week's Torah portion. The whole story of Abraham and Isaac from his growing up and with Hagar, and then with the near sacrifice of Isaac. Like, there's a lot of uncertainty and change and things that could really throw a person off, right? So how can we not be thrown off? How can we be bumped? Like, know that we don't, because anybody who does any architecture, or if you've ever lived in California, you know that earthquake codes make buildings so that they can move, right? A stiff building in an earthquake is going to just crack and crumble and go right down. So the earthquake codes are meant so that the houses and the buildings can have some give, some have some flexibility to them. And that kind of idea is a practice, is a mindfulness of equanimity, right? The building, it has to move. It can't be stiff. It can't be rigid. And so sometimes what's buffeting us isn't even like stuff that is actually happening outside. It's stuff that's happening inside, right? Our minds are like this ongoing wave of discomfort and unrest and unease. And so how can we avoid resorting to our habitual responses, whether those are actions or thoughts, or mindfully doing those things, you know, our stressful eating, but how can we like be the ones who choose how we respond rather than just responding habitually? How can we become curious about the things that trigger us or distract us? How can we choose to let go of the things that hook us? Equanimity in mindfulness is developing a curiosity and a practice of how to not be overturned. How to not let the wave, like, we might be overturned for a second, but how to rewrite ourselves when we are experiencing discomfort, When we are experiencing physical discomfort, inner narrative discomfort, external discomfort, right? So for me, because I bring my stuff to you, that's like two every week. So living through this week has been a test of equanimity for me, about how to not let the turbulence that is right now overturn me, overturn us. How do we keep an inner keel, an inner even keel, even as we go forward, regardless of how we're not in neutral, we're not idling, we're going forward, we're like that boat on the waves, but not capsizing, or the duck that, you know, just continues to pop up. So I'm wondering what you think of that, even that idea. It's a little bit of a different definition, even of equanimity. We might say equanimity is just like what it looks like on the surface, like what the duck looks like on the surface. Think about a duck, it's paddling constantly underneath, right? I don't know what you think about the idea that it actually has equanimity has a movement to it. It's not a stillness. I don't know. Do you agree, disagree? Is that metaphor of interest or work?
It works. Otherwise, if you were in constantly adjusting, you'd either be in a state of panic or you'd be numb.
So that's like, it's like on a continuum, right? Too much equanimity is numb.
Yeah.
And too little equanimity is panic or anxiety or just being overturned, like constantly being tumbling.
Yes.
And it's not the same in any given moment. So part of our own personal practice and part of like a mindfulness practice is to notice and be curious to your own experience. What does tend to, what bumps you, right? Different things bump us. It's different for each of us. I mean, yes. Like the turmoil in society this week is upending everybody, no matter what your beliefs are, right? It's just been a tough week, but like different things cause different upsets for each of us. So it's not the same stimulus. So to notice like what are the stimuli for each one of us, for yourself, and sort of the practice to gauge like what your responsiveness needs to be. Because again, if it can't just be like, okay, this is equanimity for me. This is equanimity in this moment. And this is equanimity in this moment, because they're different experiences. So part of working on this in a mindfulness practice is to notice the experiences that do really unbalance you, but practice what measure of response, what measure of change, what measure of considering differently is required for each moment. Because it may not be the same. I would suspect it wouldn't be the same. It would be easy if it were the same. I just have to fine tune that and psh, there it is, I have it, but it doesn't work that way. So it's a constant adjustment. Anybody else want to say anything? Carol?
I've been coming back a lot to what we've talked about in this class before about where do we have choices in terms of how we respond. And where I'm putting my energy and this question of just who do I choose to be in this moment? That's been helpful for me because I, you know, regardless of everything else that's happening, I feel that. I feel like I still have a choice of how I respond in this moment. And then and then just all the accessing all the tools, right? Like that, I think for me, that's where the motion is in like digging into that toolbox and figuring out like which is the right tool in this moment to help keep moving me forward so that I'm not just stuck. I don't know if that makes sense or it was relevant to what you're saying, but that's what I was thinking.
Karen?
I think this is just really resonating with me and I feel like I'm a slow learner, but gradually the mindfulness practice is just really helping. We just got back from Florida and that's a long drive. And the plan was to be with my mom for her 95th birthday. But I had said to Marvin ahead of time, I think I just love to walk on the beach at some point. I just really need that. So this duck is resonating with me because he made reservations for us at a hotel on the beach. Nice. And we spent the morning just ourselves without all the other turbulence that was going on, walking on the beach. And I think it was an instance of making a choice about what I needed to get through the stress. And the other part that I'm thinking about is walking in the water. And there were a couple of points where a wave, when things were really very, almost violent, seemed like it was just going to throw me down. And then somehow I didn't get thrown down. So it was this experience metaphorically of, you know, I can get through this. And it just was glorious. So it was mindfulness, I think, that got me through real challenges. I would like to just keep that image with me through all the turbulence that we're going through right now. But I thank you for helping in that way.
Linda?
In addition to this, my doctor recommended Headspace, which has helped me. My son got me on podcasts and Behind the Things, but I listened. Last week, I was raking leaves. We had lots of leaves to do. I was outside and listened to Michelle Obama's podcast, which was really soothing. But yesterday, I left the house. I was outside, took the dog for a walk, and was raking leaves. And then I came back in, and my friend, his girlfriend, said, oh, did you hear about this? And so-and-so state went this way and that way. But for 3 hours, I was outside with just nature. And I think mentally being away and out of the house helped. And luckily, the weather is good. And the Headspace is a breathing techniques as well. And that can help when you get tense. And I think just sometimes you have to turn this stuff off. Watch in the morning, watch at night, but middle of the day, do something else. And I'm into my quilting and doing other things. So I think we can't control what the results are going to be in these other states. All we could control was the vote that we cast. And we encourage our family and friends to vote. But, you know, you're going to have neighbors who are for one side or the other. So you have to decide not to even talk to those people. But taking time and listening to you with the different techniques has helped me a lot, too. So I thank you for that, Kendra.
So the idea of equanimity, thank you so much, everyone. The idea of equanimity is thinking about like an inner balance, right? Our world is not balanced. Our world is turbulent. That's life. There's ups and downs. There's joy and sorrow. There's fear and comfort. There's growth. There's loss. There's certainty. There's doubt. So like what Meryl talked about, like your own cultivating your own toolbox. And I guess that's what I'm just trying to continue to share with all of us, our different ideas, different Jewish tools, different spiritual tools. So like the tool of equanimity isn't the end of struggle. It's just another quality that we can say, oh, that's the one I need to draw upon right now to choose differently, to be in a different, to take a different path. I think that the things generally that unsettle our minds, each of us, are not random. Like they may feel like there's, you know, there, but even like the minutia for any of us that distract us or unsettle us. I don't believe it's random. I actually think it is our spirit talking to us and saying, these are the things that are on your spiritual curriculum. These are the things for you that you need to pay attention to. And that the distractions of our minds and the upsets of our minds are usually rooted in the various qualities that are in play for us, for any of us at the time, the places where we may be tight or have the potential to grow and cultivate. And that's what, I mean, that's exactly why, you know, different people experience different distractions. You know, for one person, any particular situation is a stimulus, and for another person, it's just like a thing. It doesn't like it doesn't trigger anything, right? But when you find things that are throwing you off balance over and over and arising again and again, that is calling to you a truth of where you might want to focus and find the tools that you need to be working for yourself to make yourself, to have yourself shine better, to find greater comfort. So part of mindfulness is cultivating an inner curiosity, a witness to what is taking place inside of you, right? Feelings, experiences, to notice them in a practice, like you can't just shut them off, but in a moment of practice, to become witness to them. So you're seeing them rather than experiencing them. Like you're saying, oh, look, I'm being your own witness. Oh, look, I am feeling distracted. I am feeling anxious. I am feeling uneasy, without judgment, but to just like be your own guide, be your own eyes, to notice what is coming up for you and pay attention to the sensations that come with that. So in this week of perhaps of turbulence, like to notice what is throwing you off, and notice that's the experience you're having. There's no even response necessary till you notice what's going on. So a lot of times our habitual responses are because we're not actually paying enough conscious attention to what's the stimulus in the first place. So our responses are habitual. And so we can change the way we even experience our own experiences just by paying attention to them, just by honoring them and saying, oh, I am feeling, look at that. I'm feeling sad about, I'm feeling lonely about, like to just begin to name our experiences, to feel them, but not to judge, oi, I'm feeling lonely again. Oi, I'm feeling anxious again. There's judgment in that, right? And so if we can instead say, well, I'm feeling anxious again. What have I been doing the last hour? What has gone on? Like, what has brought that up? Doesn't change what you're feeling, but when we can start to see what is happening for ourselves, we can then choose how we're going to respond, because we're actually responding to the stimulus and our experience, not just to the symptom, right? So one of, I found really interesting, this quote from the Talmud that is, it's kind of thinking about the counterbalance to equanimity. So when Phyllis was talking earlier about like that continuum of like too much equanimity being numb, too little equanimity being like overturned. There's another piece that our tradition looks at as sort of the opposite, the unmooring of equanimity. And that is the experience of anger. And so the line in the Talmud says, one who becomes angry should be in your eyes. In other words, you should look upon them as one who is an idolater, one who worships other gods. Idolatry is pretty bad in Jewish tradition. In fact, there are only three mitzvot that you're not allowed to transgress under any circumstances. That is idolatry, adultery, and murder, right? Any other mitzvah you can break if it meant saving a life, if it meant, right? Those are the three. So idolatry is pretty serious. So one who becomes angry, we should see as an idolater. So saying that, like, this is pretty awful, and think about it. Anger throws us off balance, right? Anger just utterly cuts the legs out from under us. We don't see clearly. It sometimes throws us off balance physically. We get worked up. We can feel ourselves physically tensing up. The waves that will come that will knock us over because we are inflexible. We don't have that, the earthquake proof building, right? Anger. So this, I was really interested because we are also sort of swirling in a large external situation of anger, and how is that getting in a way of trying to embody a spirit, a place, a setting of equanimity in ourselves. And not just trying to think about it like in the big picture out there, anger, but like when I get angry, there's distance between me and the other person, right? There's distance between me and my best self. There's distance between me and God, where I want to be. And in a sense, that's idolatry, right? There's a separation from truth, from what is most true. And it's often the things that we worship, right? That will set, like, those sacred cows that we're going to just stand up and be angry about in a personal relationship, in a communal relationship, that are fed by our anger. So for me, part of a practice of equanimity is recognizing those triggers. And I think anger, whether it's receiving someone's anger or arising in anger in ourselves, is a very different kind of upset to a practice of equanimity than just anxiety. I don't mean just anxiety, like anxiety is serious, but anger distances us in a way from everything, from ourselves, from other people, that we can't listen. Anxiety, I think we're still listening. We're still, it's turbulent, but it's a different kind of turbulence. Anger shuts us down. And so both of those are important to, I think we're focusing probably we in this moment, maybe focusing more on like the anxiety and the uncertainty. But as we think about a practice of equanimity, I think it's important to sort of dig a little bit deeper and recognize where moments, places of anger, or where anxiety turns to anger because we haven't paid attention to it. Whether it's anger at ourselves for feeling that's the judgment voice, or whether it's anger because we've gotten just so anxious and feel incapacitated, and so an anger arises in us, or just about that uncertainty, or like that uncertainty turns into just lashing out, right? Because we're so unsettled. And all of that can be the food for reflection and curiosity to bring ourselves to a place of being able to actually ride those waves more comfortably and with greater choice, and not being driven by our internal narrative and our internal experience. So we're going to do another sitting. I think I talked a lot, but you talked today too, which is really good. So if there's anything more that you want to say, otherwise I'm going to invite you to get comfortable. Okay. So again, notice that rising and falling of your breath that we did earlier. There's physical movement with every breath. Not that you have to breathe, but in the air, in being breathed, there's still movement. Movement of air. Movement of muscle and bone. And as we sit, your mind may stay busy. Sensations that you're having in your body, heaviness or aches or pains or certain emotions may continue. So I invite you to just observe that as we sit without judgment. And when your mind wanders, just gently bring it back to your breath to be easy with yourself. To return to the rising and falling, the rootedness, and the stability. So take note for a moment of the sensations in your body without attachment to those, just with curiosity. Perhaps a small place of discomfort that you can just notice. Notice with care and compassion for yourself. When we notice those discomforts in ourselves, we can take a moment to say things are as they are. And I can be with the things as they are. And I may not like these things. And that too is okay. They may not be what I want, but I can be with them. I have the capacity to be with life as it is. And now expand your awareness to your thoughts. Your body is what it is. Our mind makes constant thoughts throughout our lives. We frequently get on the wrong train and ride those thoughts. And some thoughts are perhaps uncomfortable or anxiety provoking. Or overwhelming. So now just observe your thoughts with curiosity. Don't ride them, don't get on the train. Just notice what they are. Thoughts of past or future. Thoughts of rumination, of discomfort, or sadness, or joy. Don't try to make a list of them. Or hold on to them for later. Just be with what is arising. They may not be what you want, but we can be with them. I have the capacity to be with life as it is. Let them arise and pass with curiosity. Now expand your awareness to emotions which may have already happened, for thoughts often lead us to emotions, how we feel about what we think. Emotions are part of our moment-to-moment experience that is not under our control. But we can be mindful and aware of our emotions without letting them become triggers, without getting hooked by them. So acknowledge your emotional states right now, whatever they are. The experience of them is true in this moment, but the experience does not own you. Note if an emotion triggers a thought is triggering an emotion, an urge to take action. Gently bring your attention just back to the experience of your emotional states, to the rootedness of your breathing. Menuchat HaNefesh, the resting of the soul. The resting in the midst of the body's sensations, the mind's thoughts, the heart's emotions. Like a rubber band that will be stretched and then come back to its center. the waves that will come. In your capacity to receive them and to right yourself once more. The capacity to weather each situation, each moment, may you each find the tool of equanimity in our mindfulness practice where you need it this week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to see you all. Thank you.
Everybody, keep safe and well.
Yes.
Have a good day.
Yes.
It's good weather today. Get outside. Yeah. Enjoy these moments of good weather because the winter is coming.
Have a good day. You can enjoy them in the winter too.
Yes.
Yep.